You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowlin, here with my co-host Luke Harness, and behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. We are going to cover three topics on this August afternoon. First, we are going to be discussing a back-to-school topic by talking with Jack, who will be sharing his experiences transitioning while on campus at UMKC, and speaking with Luke Harness about the support groups offered on the campus. We also have Lawrence Altman, the lead compliance attorney for the Kansas City, Missouri Public School District, to discuss the comprehensive protections for transgender students in his district. For the second half of our program, we will be interviewing Fiona Nowling, who is the leader of the Kansas City SOFA support group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender people. With Fiona is Louise, a longtime SOFA member who has had success adjusting to the transition of her child as a result of the support both she and her husband found through the SOFA group. Finally, I will do a special short report on the murder of local transgender woman Tamara Dominguez and report on the media coverage and missteps which infuriated a significant portion of the Kansas City transgender community. I'll finish up the show with a community calendar update, but first, Luke is going to give us a breakdown of some of the LGBT news this week.
Thank you, Una. According to an Australian study of hundreds of family life satisfaction, same-sex parents are some of the happiest and most supported units. The study concluded that same-sex parents were less concerned about public perceptions after battling stigma and discrimination in the past and, as a result, were found to be the most resilient. In Romania, Prince Nicholas de Rumani, I'm assuming is what that is, third in line to inherit the throne of Romania, was stripped of his title, reigniting long-standing but unproven rumors that the prince is gay. The prince was told last week his title was being removed due to moral principles. The monarchy was officially abolished in 1947, but is still attached to its formerly royal family, particularly Prince Nicholas. The king is now 93, so questions of succession are increasingly urgent. Ellen Page versus Ted Cruz. Actress Ellen Page caught Senator Ted Cruz off guard at the Iowa State Fair on Friday, pressing the presidential candidate about LGBT rights as he grilled pork chops. In video posted online by ABC News, Page asked Cruz about employment protection for LGBT people. Cruz responded that Bible-believing Christians were being persecuted for living according to their faith. Ellen Page came out last year and has taken aim at Cruz before because of his positions. Ashley Madison fallout. The hacking and release of names of 37 million account holders from the Ashley Madison family of websites means that some people are now fearing for their lives, since some gay users live in countries where being homosexual is illegal and, in some cases, punishable by death. Ashley Madison owns gay domains like ManCrunch and We Know Down Low, including over 50 accounts from Qatar where homosexual relations can land you 5 years in prison, and 1,500 accounts are from Turkey where homosexuality can ban people from military service. The Stonewall movie. The upcoming film Stonewall, about the riots that spawned the modern gay civil rights movement, has generated controversy as its trailer appears to diminish the role of the people of color, hustlers, lesbians, drag queens, and transgender people who led the riots. In protest of the perception, two of the four statues commemorating the riots have been painted brown and dressed in wigs and bras by activists who also placed a sign nearby which read, "Black Latina trans women led the riots. Stop the whitewashing." I just saw the trailer again last night at the movies, and it, again, infuriated me because it looks awful.
I agree. It looks
simply abominable. I just can't imagine what's going through some people's heads when they decide to do this.
And along the same lines of that kind of sadness about Tamara Dominguez, she escaped discrimination in Mexico only to find death in a Kansas City church parking lot when the 36-year-old trans woman was repeatedly run over by the vehicle's driver, a witness told authorities. The Veracruz native's death adds to the growing number of transgender women of color who have been killed in 2015, a statistic that spiked in the past week with at least four known homicides. The Kansas City Anti-Violence Project, Una Lucha KC, the Justice Project, and One Struggle KC call for action and healing in response, noting that her biological family is not supportive of her transgender identity. Her chosen family is collecting donations for memorial services for Tamara, as well as supporting her partner and community through their GoFundMe page. There will be a memorial service followed by a community healing event for the LGBTQ communities on Sunday, August 30th. And that is the news.
So before we start, have you had a good month, Luke?
I've had a really busy month. School starts on Monday, and I am going back to those times back in high school thinking, oh my gosh, what have I done to myself?
Yes, you're going back for a graduate degree, correct?
Correct, and a master's in higher education administration.
That's really awesome.
What about your month?
I am going on a teaching tour of Asia, teaching in China, Thailand, and India next Friday for a month. I'll be back just in time for our next Trans Talk, but I've been a little stressed out getting 2,100 PowerPoint slides produced.
Oh, my gosh.
Produced. Yes.
It sounds like what my classes are going to be like.
Well, I want to move on then into our first segment here, which deals with education. There have been many positive transgender advances lately in every aspect of not just transgender lives, but lives in general, in terms of employment protections, civil rights protections showing up in many new states and cities, and also in terms of education access and education protections for students against such things as bullying and discrimination from school administrators. This is why I'm very happy that today we have two representatives to speak on this topic. Actually, three, technically. Jack is going to be talking to us a bit about the experience from the student side of transgender. Lawrence Altman is going to be speaking to us from the educational administration side of transgender. And Luke Harness is going to be talking with us, too, and sharing his experiences about his involvement in the two UMKC trans-oriented groups. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask a question of Larry first and just see... Can you tell me a little about the current policies of the KCMO school district, which are working to protect transgender students?
Yes, I can. A little over 3 years ago, the Kansas City, Missouri Public Schools adopted a transgender policy. What is in effect and has been in effect for those 3 years is that if a child comes to us and tells us that they want to be acknowledged as a certain gender, we will honor that commitment to them. And what that will mean is that we will then inform staff that, and we'll ask the child what name, what pronoun do they prefer. The child will then tell us that. We will then inform staff that that will be the appropriate pronoun and that will be the appropriate name to be used by this child. That if other students were to tease this child and know and not honor that request, that would be subject to our disciplinary rules. In addition, the child would then inform us, we give the child, the transgender child, the choice of bathrooms and locker facilities. So again, if the child says, I wish to dress in the locker room and use the bathroom that is consistent with my gender identity, we will do that. If someone else has a problem with that, namely other students, they will move. At the same time, if the child says, can I have a private area to change? May I have a private bathroom? We will honor that request as well. We leave that to the child. As far as athletics, if it's intramural athletics, the child will be permitted and to participate with the gender that they identify with. Now, if it's a competitive sport in which the school is competing against other schools in the state or in the city, we have no problem with allowing the child to participate with the sport that they identify with their gender. However, we do not control the state athletic association.
Right.
If the state athletic association says, no, that's not permitted, well, you know, we can't control that. And so that's what we enforce.
How did KCMO evolve to have such a progressive set of policies, which I understand is almost unique outside of California?
Well, for a fact, we know that in the Midwest, we are the only school that has a transgender policy. Dr. Stephen Green, at that time, was the superintendent of the Kansas City Public Schools. And he approached our head legal counsel, Mr. Ray Sousley, and said that I want all children to feel safe and secure in our school district. And instructed Ray to do some research to find out what was available around the country that would allow us to draft a policy that would be in compliance with Dr. Green's instructions. Mr. Sousley, mm-hmm. along with one of our other attorneys, Ms. Shauna Long, researched and found as a model what was not the law yet of California, but was in the set. It was being discussed in California.
Yes.
And then adopted many of the features of that California law as our policy. At that point, it was presented to the Kansas City, our board, who passed it unanimously.
Wow.
And so here we are.
That is incredible. Do you know how many transgender children are attending within the KCMO school district?
No, and I would not know. Because it's a need-to-know situation. Even though I am among my duties as lead compliance officer for special education, Section 504, and I am also the Title IX coordinator for the district, those matters don't need to be cleared with our office. That is kept. We try to keep, for the privacy of the child, we try to minimize who has access to that information because the data seems to suggest, and we are concerned, we do not want a child to be outed. So we try to keep this as – we ask the child, how far do you want us to expand your information? And so I wouldn't know unless there would be a problem.
So based upon that, then how would you gauge the success of these policies since they've been instated?
Well, I feel because we've not had any public unrest, if you will, quote, complaints or whatever it is, I would believe that we are succeeding.
The help has been immeasurable, really.
Now, I have attended the Trans Plus Allies sessions several times. I think I spoke at a couple of them. In fact, I did. I just remembered. And I have been very impressed by the large number of people that show up for these, and I've been stunned at what seems to be a very large number of transgender students on UMKC's campus. Is the campus atmosphere overall very positive and accepting of transgender students?
I would say it's very positive and accepting of all types of people, really. I mean, you see, like all the bulletin boards are full up of flyers for all different kinds of groups, and you see a lot of LGBT QIA flyers and groups and mm-hmm. social things like that. And yeah, I it feels very positive, very accepting. I don't feel afraid at all to be on campus.
And as I know this, but our audience doesn't know, what you're studying at UMKC.
Right. I am in the School of Pharmacy. I am going into my second year on Monday, and that's out of 4 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I know that must be a really tough program, which is why I would not put myself through that. So, now I know That's at Hospital Hill, so it's separate.
Right, it's different
from the Volcker campus.
Yes.
Yeah, so have you noticed any differences in the separate campuses?
No, actually. I mean, I've been thinking of a way, I've been trying to describe my transition on campus, and I've come up with, it's been blissfully uneventful. It is, there have been no hiccups, no anything. I told the staff. The staff was respecting, and they haven't messed up yet, and the students are all fine with me. I let everybody know from the very beginning what was going on, and I haven't received any sort of awkward questions or any disparaging remarks, nothing like that. It's been great.
That really is wonderful, and I have been amazed at the significant number of transgender faculty on UMKC. I'm not going to out anyone there, but I know of almost half a dozen professors or adjunct professors that are actually transgender. I'm an adjunct professor of mechanical engineering at UMKC, just for full disclosure. Luke, are there any plans for these two support groups on campus? Any big plans for this upcoming school year?
We have been planning over the summer. Typically, with the Transbus Allies, we're still just going to do the traditional once-a-month meeting that includes pizza, which is always delicious. It's
course.
A nice addition. So we've just been planning the topics for each month. And for the Transbus Social, so the way that student organizations work and making those official on campus, both groups, Transbus Social and Transbus Allies, are actually considered under one group for Transbus, and we actually are recognized as an official student group, and so we do get a little bit of seed money. So we're trying to, I don't think this is a surprise. If it is a surprise and I forgot, then nobody heard this. But we are trying to plan like a bowling trip as a kind of fun for the group to go out to. Jack, just forget I said that.
I thought it was mini golf.
Mini golf?
One thing that impressed me about the transgender student population on UMKC's campus, and this might be relatively common among young folks today. I say that because I'm nearing the dark side of 50 before too long. But there is a very large number of non-gender binary transgender people at UMKC. And I wanted to ask yourself and Luke, do you think that that is just a movement that has formed recently, or is it more something where people from my era generally could not fall into a gender non-binary? We had to actually pick one or the other.
I think there's definitely a social evolution that happens with these things. So I think it takes a long time for the general population to be like, you can go from one to the other. And so to go from saying that I am a binary person to a non-binary person, that just takes a lot more thinking and a lot more getting used to. So it's definitely just an evolutionary thing, I think.
I think all throughout time, people have had gender feelings and not known how to express it based upon what society was putting forth. And so I myself want to deconstruct the idea that there is a gender binary and just recognize that it's a spectrum. So in changing our language, making it a more qualitative language and more inclusive language, instead of saying, oh, the opposite gender or the other gender, is saying another gender, a different gender. As Larry said earlier, I really appreciated your language when you didn't say the opposite gender. You said a certain gender, whichever gender someone identifies with.
I caught that too, yes.
Yeah.
I have learned quite a lot from attending the Trans Plus Allies meetings. I was somewhat ignorant on non-gender binary, gender fluid topics and feelings. And I sometimes think that I know everything there is to know about being trans, but there is a lot to learn by attending these meetings and listening to the voices there. I guess I'd like to ask a question of you two and then ask the same question of Larry. Is there more work to be done, really, or a significant amount of more work to be done to make a campus like UMKC more accepting? Because it sounds like they're doing a pretty good job right now.
I would say that they are doing a very good job right now, at least as far as my experience has gone. I'm not sure about other people's experiences, so I can't speak on behalf of other people, but I would say that to stop improving would not be the way to go. You can always make improvements. Right. You can always get better. But it's, right now, at least for me and my experience, it's been really great.
And also, not to speak on behalf of other people, but Jonathan at UMKC has mentioned to me before that within the last year alone, there are now 6 LGBT different groups on campus at UMKC from when before it used to just be Pride Alliance, I think. And a couple of those are the trans groups that started just recently. And then I was asking about Hospital Hill earlier because I know someone was awarded at the Lavender Banquet for helping bring more LGBT issues and bringing that support to the Hospital Hill campus as well when before it was not there.
I see. Larry, in your opinion, is there more work to be done still for the KCMO school district?
Well, there's always work to do. And in that sense is that – and I say that because April 29th, 2014, the Office for Civil Rights, at the behest of President Obama, issued a 30-plus page memorandum regarding Title IX and sexual harassment. They repeated its position that they've held since 2010, that transgender students are part of the population that are entitled to protection under Title IX from sexual harassment and sexual violence. In the April 29th directive, there is a component that specifically addresses our transgender student population that says to us as administrators that we must include training of our staff and of our students to understand and respect the transgender population of our school district. In addition, the directive had told us, and this is not just us, I'm talking around the country, informed schools around the country, including universities and colleges, that if a transgender child was involved as a victim, that they wanted someone to come in who was an expert in the field to help the school officials understand how to interact with the child and how to assist the child post issues. Now, to that end, again, I'm going to boast of our school district. After the April 29th directive that I was assigned the task as the Title IX coordinator. I then studied in detail the directive, and I believe I've shared with you what I wrote, and I believe you were kind enough to publish it. Again, with the support of Dr. Green, and it continues under Mr. Altunas, and with the continued support of Mr. Sousley, I instituted Title IX training across the board and called in outside groups who were experts in various areas, in transgender, in gay, in lesbian, to help with our teams so that if we had that issue with one of our other children being victimized, that we knew how to deal with it. We now have training videos that we are starting this year as we've upgraded again. And in the training videos, as I helped manage putting those together with an outside vendor, I insisted that we have a transgender component. And in their videos, we have 2 trans individuals who are part of the videos. And so that we want to make sure that everybody understands that our school district tolerates zero any type of harassment for however the gender position of that individual. Again, talking to my colleagues around the country, even before we put the videos up and running for this year, again, at the same conferences, I've had over 100, maybe 200 requests for our training materials under Title IX. And now when they've heard that we are installing and we have our video training, it's the same thing. You mean, wait a minute, you were already ahead of us, and now you're doing this. Yes. That comes down from leadership. And it started, as I said, I'm going to brag again about Dr. Green. I'm going to brag about Mr. Sousley. I'm going to brag about Altunas. Those 3 people have led us, and they've allowed me to do my job to make certain that we do the best we can. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. Do we expect more issues? Look, it's going to happen. The courts have recognized kids are kids. Kids are going to do things that are, quote, not acceptable in the outside real world, but they are going to do kid things. It's how we react, and that's what we have as a policy of making sure that when we react, it's prompt and that we try to prevent recurrence of any kind of discrimination.
And speaking of Title IX at the university level, that reminded me, I noticed on signing into Blackboard for UMKC, students are required to take Title IX training before, if they don't take it by October, they will not be able to continue in classes.
We have that is because the feds and on April 29th, and we have that same-ish thing, is that it is mandatory periodic training. And so we are going to conduct it annually that will be finished by October 1st of every school year, of every staff, of every child. And if you are new to the district, as part of your as a new employee, as part of your introduction program, you will take the video training. As part of your registration process as a student, you will watch the video. And as the Title IX coordinator, I have a computer checklist that tells me when everybody has been trained.
One last thing that I would like to ask is really to Jack. Are you hopeful that this trend is going to continue? Are you hopeful? Do you just have a lot of hope in you because of the support that you've received here? Has it really made a difference to you?
Definitely. The support from Trans Plus, the support from the faculty, from my classmates, has definitely made it easier for me to transition. Definitely made me a lot more hopeful for the future, that getting a job and maintaining the job and maintaining my relationships with my classmates, with my friends, is going to be not only easy but fun. I'm very, very hopeful.
I'd like to thank you both for coming here and joining us in our studio today. We're going to take a break to hear a little bit of music, and then we will be back to talk to Fiona Nowling and Louise about the SOFA support group. Thank you.
And we are back on Trans Talk. That was Harvey by Zoe Lewis. I have with me here is Fiona Nowling, who is the leader of SOFA in Kansas City. SOFA, again, is the Significant Others, Friends, Family, and Allies of Transgender People. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Luke.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And then we also have Louise here, who has been a long-term member of SOFA and who also has a transgender child.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on. So, Fiona, I want to start with you. Can you tell us about the SOFA group and its mission?
Well, its mission is to support the significant others, friends, family, and allies of trans people. A lot of the time when people come out, people don't know anything about what being transgender is or means, what it means for the person, what it's going to mean for them as a family. So we support people two ways. We support them to help realize what the change means for them and its impact to them, and to help them when they're floundering around wondering, what the hell, I thought I knew this person. And we support them to support their family member or spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever in how to best support them and make the transition as easy as possible for them.
And that, I know that is so crucial in our in the community as well, because that can be some of the hardest parts about transition, is dealing with your family members, your friends, your significant others and allies. And so what got you interested in the SOFA group originally? You were a member before.
Yes, and yes. I've got a slightly unusual story.
I wonder with who. Just kidding.
Because my wife, Una, I knew she was trans before I even met her, whereas most people, the trans person's been struggling with it for years, but it comes as a complete surprise for them. So I went to the SOFA group to see if I could get any information there that would help me help Una, and also in case I could contribute, because I could share my story without perhaps having some of the shock or feeling of betrayal that some people have of, I thought I knew this person, and either I didn't see something or they've been lying to me when they've been struggling with it themselves. So helping people realize that and deal with that.
Right. So I can imagine that would be really an individual kind of reaction if someone isn't talking to anyone else, feeling that betrayal, but rather you go to this group and it's kind of an echo of validation and that others are feeling the same way.
Yes. Yeah, some people feel very betrayed. Some people feel like, I really should have known this all along. This makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So everyone's reactions are different. And unfortunately, some of the people that hurt the most and could benefit most from the group, because they hurt, they don't feel like going out and talking to anybody. I wish we could reach out to more people and help them more and help their families more.
Right. So what would you? How would you describe a typical meeting night?
Well, we tend to have about between 4 to, we've had about 12 people. And we'll go around the group and ask how people are doing. If particular people have particular issues, we'll focus on those issues that week, and people will share their stories and how they've dealt with that issue. Sometimes we have a lot of parents present, or sometimes we have a lot of partners present, so that will alter the focus a little. But there's usually a fair mix of people that are partners of people, whether trans men or trans women, and parents as well.
Now, I understand that transgender persons themselves are usually not allowed to attend SOFA meetings. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What is the rationale behind that decision?
It lets people be free to vent And it lets people be free to offer support from their own stories without possibly embarrassing their wife or husband or whoever by sharing that in front of them. And lets people be... It lets them use their own phrasing for something which might possibly be taken as being hurtful if you were trans. I mean, one of the things we do is we try and encourage people to use the right pronouns. Sometimes that's really hard for people, especially if their person in their family isn't actually out in public. So they're having to switch backwards and forwards between pronouns and things like that. So we encourage people to perhaps use they, so that if they can train themselves to use they won't accidentally misgender someone and out them in public. And they won't hurt them if they're in private by using the wrong gender, because switching backwards and forwards can be really tricky.
Do you have any... Have you ever had any members in the group of someone who knew someone who was identified as non-binary or gender fluid?
We have had a couple of members that are their family, and it's been younger people, it's been their children that have identified that way. And like Una said earlier, it's much rarer for middle-aged or older adults to identify as non-binary.
I wanted to ask Louise, who is here joining us, what specifically led you to joining the SOFA group?
Well, actually, when we first got the diagnosis for Libby, I knew that my husband knew Fiona from, you know, a networking group of, you know, Thursday lunch people. And I found out that Fiona was the one that ran the group. So I called Fiona, and I was pretty much a basket case then. And Fiona invited me to your house, and being able to sit and talk with the two of you about all of our concerns was really what led me to realize I needed that kind of continuing support.
Yes, that's now. And you have your transgender daughter is in high school, and she said that we could use her name because this was an old fogey network, and none of her friends would listen
yes.
to it,
and no one would be listening. So, yeah, that's true. Libby is not out at school because of bullying that she suffered, you know, in elementary school, just regarding just silly stuff, and so it's led her to not want to come out for fear of continued bullying at school. So
from your perspective as a mother, as much as you can, talk to us about how you felt this experience of having a transgender daughter and what that experience has been like for you.
Well, it's been a journey. In the beginning, it was very difficult. It was kind of, I liken it to a grieving process. Because on one hand, I was losing a son. And I think that my husband was afraid that he was going to lose the closeness that he had with that son. But I realized, you know, as time went by and going through those different stages of grief, that acceptance was what I needed to get to. And in order to be able to love and support my child, because my child's life was not going to be easy. And so if he can get that love and support, or she can get that love and support at home, then that's going to fortify her for the rest of her life.
And so would you say working through that with you and her husband kind of on the same page at the same time?
Has no, actually, differing? I think I came to an acceptance a little bit sooner than my husband did. Like I said, I think it was because, you know, he didn't want to lose the closeness. So
where is that with their relationship now? Has he realized that's not going to happen? Or
oh, yeah, It's been about 2.5 years since we first found out, since our child first told us. Mm-hmm. And it took him a little bit longer, but not that much longer. And he realizes that they still share the same things in common. They're still very into computers. They're still very into gaming. And so the only thing that they've lost is my child insisted on dropping out of Boy Scouts. So
I remember your husband was really, really wanted to continue that Boy Scout connection. And that, I think, was maybe one of the largest hurdles that he had.
Yes. Yeah, that was difficult because we wanted our child to get to that end goal of making Eagle Scout, and our child was not interested. And so being able to accept that was difficult for him at first, but he's come along.
I joke with my mom that when I was a kid, Girl Scouts already knew before I did, and they didn't accept me as a Girl Scout because they knew I was a boy.
How specifically has the SOFA group been helpful to you and your family then?
Well, it's allowed us to not only get answers to questions that we had no idea about, but it's allowed us a place to, Fiona said, to vent about certain things, because there are differences in, not only teenagers are they difficult, but the different aspect of how our child is changing in a lot more, ways than your typical teenager. So it's allowed us to vent our, frustrations and our, and to share our joys.
We're going to take a brief break for a station announcement, and then we will return with talking to Fiona and Louise.
Supporting KKFI, the 36th Annual Ethnic Enrichment Festival, Friday through Sunday, August 21st, 22nd, and 23rd at Swope Park. Featuring food, music, dance, and crafts that represent more than 55 cultures from around the world, as well as cultural information, several hands-on activities, and workshops for kids. Details and entertainment schedule at www.eeckc.org.
90.1 FM invites you to White Noise Embracing the Spirit, Sunday, September 13th from 1:30 to 6 p.m. at Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri. This one-day retreat is for writers and poets, painters and photographers, and curious others to explore, write, and create on the grounds of one of the most haunted locations in the Midwest. For more information, call 816-931-8858 or visit KKFI.org.
And we are back on Trans Talk here with Fiona, the leader of the SOFA group, and Louise, a long-term member and mother of a transgender child. So, Louise, we've been talking about your trans daughter, Libby. She sounds like a really fun girl.
She is. She's great.
But I agree with what you were saying earlier, that teenagers are rough. So I remember when I was 15, and I don't envy your position. So congratulations so far for getting through that as well up until this point. And so I think this would be, and this is something that I was thinking of asking as well, any advice you would give to other parents who may be going through the same thing with their children coming out to them as trans? Or I think you said earlier when she got the diagnosis, I'm assuming for the GID, the gender identity. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to parents kind of in that boat?
Well, my advice is to be, to accept your child, even though it might be difficult for you, to understand that it's so much more difficult for them. If they're coming out to you, it means that they have a level of trust already. And so honor that trust and be there for your child. What else?
Well, I know a lot of parents may struggle through issues of feeling shame or that they're going to be judged themselves by other people once they find out that their child is transitioning. Did you ever go through any of those feelings, those experiences?
Yeah, I did. I did, but the thing is, your child is your child, and Libby happens to be my youngest, and I've realized that, the first three, your child has a different identity than you. And I think that, like I said, if your child is coming out to you in the first place, you've already done something right, And so hold on to that and be there for them, because your child doesn't always tell you everything. I didn't realize that Libby had been harming herself. And so I feel in a way that I've saved my child's life. because she never had to get to the point where she felt like she wanted to take her life because she couldn't be understood. And so in a way, I feel as if the acceptance has given her, you know, that soft place to land.
I thought that was a very profound statement. If your child is coming out to you, then you're already doing something right.
And I'd like to thank Louise, because quite a few people go to SOFA, and when they've dealt with their own issues and they feel confident and comfortable, then they leave and they sort of mature beyond it. But Louise, continuing people that come back when they don't have any issues so they can share their experiences and help other people, really keeps the group going and makes it so much more valuable to people.
Thanks. You're welcome.
No, again, I think it's incredible to see parents and family members and allies and everything out there that are so supportive and looking to help their children or however they're connected to those trans people. I spoke at PFLAG once, and just the amount of, there were a couple parents there that were coming to find out more information because their kids were gay and, you know, sharing their stories. And it just really touched me, like going out on your own and trying to figure out and educate yourself and help yourself and then help your child. It's phenomenal. And that's, we need more people like that in the world that will do that, because it'll make it a better world. I think more accepting people will feel safer, more open to be their true selves. So thank you.
You're
sincerely.
Welcome. You're welcome.
Yes. Thank you too very much for coming.
So we are going to go ahead and move on to our next segment here. So again, thank you so much, Fiona and Luis. It's been great having you on the show.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The Kansas City LGBT community was stunned by the murder last Saturday of Tamara Dominguez, a local transgender woman. Her murder brings to 17 the number of transgender Americans killed this year, all of them women, most of them women of color. In addition to outrage and sadness felt by the LGBT community over her murder, many were outraged at media reports which at first misgendered Ms. Dominguez. Local transgender people in particular were indignant at repeated misgendering and deadnaming of the victim, and they set social media on fire this last week. Our very own Una Nalling decided to contact local media outlets to get the straight dope on why Ms. Dominguez's murder was so badly reported initially. Thank you, Una, and thank you for doing this research here.
Certainly, it had to be done.
So what kind of research were you doing, and what have you found so far?
Well, what I did the day that the story broke is I contacted all of the major television outlets and their news through their news links or through emails and so forth, as well as the Kansas City Star, to ask them what was the rationale behind referring to Ms. Dominguez as he or male in their reports, as well as continuing to use the name Jesus instead of Tamara to identify them. Most people I contacted responded back to me. KMBC9 and Fox 4 KC declined to talk to me, but I had some very positive conversations with other media outlets.
And what have you found out, any more information in regards to what we already know about the incident, the murder that had happened?
We really don't have much additional public information on the crime itself. I was told off the record by a source with the KCPD that the incident was suspected to be related to prostitution, which is a tragic but all too common factor in the murders of our transgender sisters and brothers around the world. They were unwilling to name any leads on a suspect at this point. A GoFundMe page that was set up to cover the victim's burial expenses reached its goal in about 2 days, but I understand there is a controversy forming as Ms. Dominguez's family in Mexico was not supportive of her transgender identity, and thus her chosen family here in Kansas City wants to keep her with the community where she can be buried and remembered as the woman she was.
And have you spoken with anyone about how that, the legality of that, what will most likely happen?
No, I really haven't got into that aspect of it.
That's where it kind of gets murky, I think, with a case like this, with the legality of what's going on around that. Because I know I read reports, there was an opinion article on the Kansas City Star that was kind of a response to the outrage in the community. And it was going along the lines of the legality of the police have to go do it this way because of the legal name that's known, and then that's how they have to report it. But then,
oh, yes, of course. I thought you were talking about the legality of the burial. Yes, I had a lengthy conversation with an editor from the Star who was quite upset at the vitriol over the reporting, and he brought up a few good points. First, in tragedies like this, official information is sometimes slow to come in. It doesn't move at Facebook speed, and it can sometimes be difficult to get confirmation on critical facts. Even if some people are reporting, this is the fact out there, this is the reality. If there's no confirmation on that, then a newspaper is put into an ethical quandary with respect to how much do they put themselves out on a limb factually. Another item is the Star did not want to assume that someone identified as transgender necessarily when they might actually identify as a crossdresser, genderqueer, non-binary, or some other designation. In other words, they really wanted to make sure that they got the facts straight. They like all the other media outlets, initially misgendered and dead-named Ms. Dominguez because that was essentially the information they received from the KC Police Department, which I examined as well, and they said just that. It did not refer to Ms. Dominguez as being transgender. As you said, the Star's public editor wrote a lengthy entry on their frustration and how they've been labeled and dragged through the mud over this past week. And the truth is the Star has been highly supportive and transgender-friendly in recent years. Most notably, the front-page feature piece by Eric Adler on my friend Debbie Jackson and her transgender daughter. I will note that KCTV5's reporter Heather Staggers appears to have been the only station which properly gendered and named Ms. Dominguez early on, and Heather sent a mail to me and told me that she had actually contacted Carolyn Gibbs at the Transgender Institute prior to writing the article so she could get the gender and name as accurately as possible.
That's awesome, and how far we can all get with just a little bit of research prior to, huh?
And I would just caution members of the transgender community, of which, of course, you and I are both members as well.
What? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know I outed you. Official media doesn't move at Facebook speed, and people sometimes make mistakes that are innocent. I know that dead naming and misgendering does help perpetuate the violence against us because it, in effect, is an illegitimizing process for us, but at the same time, there are other things that these media outlets have to consider, and a little patience is what they might need sometimes.
Well, thank you for doing that research and giving us an update on everything that's going on. I'm glad that we have you in the community to go ahead and spearhead that kind of information so that way we can clear up some of the confusion and help educate our local media outlets so that we, God forbid this ever happen again, but that we are correctly reported in the future.
Thank you, Luke. I'm going to go ahead and do the community calendar update now before we have to sign off. Tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Trans Talk hostesses Sandra Mead and myself will be speaking at Kansas City Oasis on the topic of sexuality and gender and the medical background and what the brain has to do with that. This will be held at their meeting at 2050 West Penway Street, Kansas City, Missouri. On Wednesday, September 9th, Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. Hear Me Out Toastmasters is an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills. They will be meeting at 5 p.m. on September 3rd. Every third Thursday at Like Me Lighthouse, the Equal Trans Support Group will meet at 5 p.m. and that will be on the 17th this month here. Like Me Lighthouse is just a couple doors down from our studio at 3909 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. On Thursday, September 24th, Hamburger Mary's will host KC Kickoff, which is a charity bingo event to support local entertainers as they travel to Memphis, Tennessee to compete in the Miss Gay America pageant. Hamburger Mary's is located at 3700 Broadway in Kansas City. The Kansas City SOFA Support Group, which we just heard about on this program, meets on the first and third Wednesday of this month. On September 2nd, they will meet at 6:30 at the Leawood Pioneer Library in Study Room Room 115 at 4700 Town Center Drive, Leawood, and they will meet at September 16th at the Johnson County Lackman Library, 15345 West 87th Street in Lenexa. And finally, the Kansas City PFLAG chapter will meet on the second Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village, and at the fourth Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at Like Me Lighthouse. That's the community calendar for this upcoming month, and to all my transgender sisters and brothers out there, be exceedingly good to yourselves.
Thank you for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The Tenth Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Jack, Larry Altman, Fiona Nalling, and Louise. I'd also like to thank my co-host, Una Nalling, as well as our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. You can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to thetenthvoice@gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. And be sure to join The Tenth Voice next weekend as well, where host Philip Hoosier will be leading the show. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.